The Vista Chamber is excited to announce the third year of our Velocity Internship Program in partnership with the Vista Unified School District. If you'd like to learn more about the Velocity Summer Internship Program, please visit our website at vistachamber.org. The Velocity Summer Internship Program is a paid internship program for local students who are matched with local businesses in the career industry of their choice. Check it out today. Welcome to Velocity, the Vista Chamber podcast. I'm your host, Chamber CEO Rachel Beld, and it's my privilege to interview the movers, shakers, and change makers impacting our amazing Vista community and beyond. Today, I am happy to welcome Martha Alvarado, Vista Unified School Board Trustee for District 3 and current board president. Ms. Alvarado was elected in 2018. She's a Marine Corps veteran and an elementary school teacher with two decades of experience. Originally from Los Angeles, she's lived in North County for over 25 years, and she graduated from Palomar College while on active duty, eventually transferring to Cal State San Marcos. In 1999, she graduated with honors, becoming the first in her family to earn a college degree. She continued at CSUSM, earning a bilingual teaching credential. Her priorities as a trustee are to close the opportunity gap while increasing the number of students attending post-secondary education, and to expand the dual language programs within the district. Welcome, Martha. So glad to have you.
I'm so happy to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I know you're super busy and that you're in the classroom. So I appreciate you carving out time away from your first graders to hang out with me for a little while today. So thank you. Thank you. So I want to jump in. I want to learn a little bit more about you. And so I want to ask you, you have such a rich background. You served as a Marine. You've been an educator. Tell me a little bit about your background. How did you go to the Marines? How did you then become a teacher? Tell me about that path.
Well, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. My mom was a single mother, and because of that, we moved 11 times by the time I graduated. And in that context, I really connected with so many of my teachers that I felt as a high schooler that I wanted to give back to my community in that context. But I didn't necessarily have the plan to or the ability to go to a four-year university right out of high school. So after contemplating how I could pay for my college education, I decided to join the Marine Corps. And within that time frame, I served 5 years on active duty and 3 years reserve time. When I was active duty, I was going to school at night, just chipping away, taking a class at Palomar, these 8-week courses. And so by the time I got out, by the time I EAS'd, I was able to transfer into Cal State San Marcos, but I also had a 1-year-old son, Pedro. So I was trying to think about a job that would help me be available for my son present. And so I came back to teaching. It was another way for me to give back to my community the way my teachers gave to me and my fellow classmates, but also be at present and raising my son. And I thought that teaching was a good fit for that. So that's kind of how I came to that decision to say, I'm going to become a teacher.
Wow. That's amazing. It's amazing that you had the opportunity to expand your education through military service. I know that's an option for a lot of students. And kudos to you for taking advantage of that and just chipping away, going to Palomar and just focusing on your education. I'm curious, though, you mentioned your son, Pedro.
Yes.
And I'm curious about how does motherhood influence you as a teacher? And how does teaching influence you as a mother?
Motherhood, I have one son, right? But I feel to some extreme, like those students, that they're family, mm-hmm. right? I have a need to not just teach them the academics, but to mold them, to guide them emotionally, socially, give them the guidance that they need in the same way that I would do that for my son. Mm-hmm. And I often tell my students that there's nothing that I don't expect or ask you to do that I wouldn't expect my son to do, or I haven't asked him to do that. So I don't think it's necessary to be a parent to be a good teacher, but for me, it felt like an extension of my family. And then in terms of how teaching influences how I mothered my son, perhaps I was a bit rigid with him. He would joke around and say, boy, it's really difficult being the child of a teacher, you know, or in a Marine. Maybe the expectations were high because I wanted him to thrive. And also I was able to advocate for him. I knew the system, mm-hmm. the educational system, and what I needed to do to advocate for him. And I think some families don't have those tools yet, but I knew what I needed to do so that he had, you know, he had the best opportunities in Vista Unified.
Yeah, so he's a product of Vista Unified.
He is.
Tell me, where did he go to school?
So he went to Temple Heights the first year that it opened. And then he went to Roosevelt Middle School for 6th, 7th, and 8th. And then he went to Vista High, graduating in 2014. So the first couple of years of his education, I took him to Escondido with me to the school that I taught at, mm-hmm. Lincoln Primary, because it was kind of easy with a half-day kindergarten, having him over there. His dad worked nights. I'm not married anymore, but my ex-husband, he worked nights. So it was just easy for me mm-hmm. to take my son Pedro to school. But as soon as Temple Heights opened up, it was a neighborhood school, and I wanted him to have a circle of friends, a social network that was close that he could play with, especially as an only child. So as soon as it was open, I'm like, this is where we're going. You know, we're going to be a dragon here at Temple Heights. And it's the Leadership Academy now, but it was Temple Heights Elementary when it opened.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
that's great. So tell me, shifting a little bit to your role as a board trustee for the school district, you've served since 2018 in yes. this role. And what does a school board member do? What do you do for that?
It's interesting because really the job of the school board member, you have one employee, that's the superintendent. Collectively, the board hires a superintendent, but also to have the visions and the goals set forth for the district, essentially providing a map to where the district wants to go and wants to be and what kind of outcomes we want for our students. So it's definitely a job that it's not micromanaging people or policies or programs or schools, but it's like kind of big picture. What do I want to see for this school district governance? And I don't think people understand that sometimes. Sometimes folks, you know, want to call me with like, I'm quality control. This is happening. This is happening. Right. This is happening. Can you go take care of it? And not only is it not governance, but it's not necessarily appropriate for me to go to an employee or someone and say like, this is a problem, right? It's not my place. So I think sometimes folks think that that's our job mm-hmm. as a school board trustee, but really it's a big picture job, right? And it's to improve the outcomes and to get kids ready for life after they graduate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with regard to the supervision, you mentioned that the superintendent reports to the board.
Yes.
And then everyone else falls under the superintendent's
right.
purview
right.
in, you know, various branches.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that's really important for people to understand. I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand that with regard to the school district
right.
or even local government or even at the chamber. I'm the CEO. I report to my board.
Right.
Every other employee reports to me. So like you said, it's about that appropriateness of it's not appropriate for a board trustee on the school board to approach a teacher about a conflict that happened in the classroom. And so if you hear about that, it's you might
right.
tell the superintendent about what you've heard, and then they can look into it as
right.
appropriate, right? That kind of thing.
Right. It's
yeah.
a chain of command,
yeah.
just like in the Marine Corps. So for me, it was kind of an easy transition
right.
to understand the chain of command and mission accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And but sometimes, you know, it's hard to kind of separate. And so I just always focus back on the big picture. And I've been able to have some training through the California School Boards Association mm-hmm. initially for new trustees to really understand that. Because when I ran for office, I got to tell you, I did not understand that. Even being a teacher in another district, I didn't understand kind of the
right.
big picture of a governance of a school board.
Well, and I was going to ask you, how do you think that the role of being a teacher in the classroom has impacted you as a school board member? I'm sure that's influenced the way you approach your decisions.
Well, I do that's really important, right? Because I work in a school district where there's high poverty, similar to Vista Unified. We have some of the highest pockets of poverty in North County. So I do understand firsthand what some of the obstacles are for some of our students, our families, and our staff. So I think, you know, kind of being in the trenches helps me just guide my decisions on how we can improve outcomes. Also, I was one of those students once upon a time, right? Growing up in LA, I went to Woodworth School in Inglewood, Oak Street, Buford and Lenox. That's the area where LAX is at, unincorporated county land of LA. Eucalyptus, Hawthorne Intermediate, Hawthorne High, Luzinger, El Rancho High School, and back. So I understand also as a student with lived experience, having to move several times, being homeless, what our students, some of our students go through, not all of our students. Right. So I think my lived experiences as a child, as a student, and then my experience as a teacher working in high poverty neighborhoods and schools helped me really understand the community that we serve. And also, I want to add to that, being a military veteran, I understand our military families in North County that have to move often. They have to, you know, a parent gets orders to transfer to another duty station and then the kids are uprooted again. So I have just a unique perspective, I think, that helps me, it helps me navigate decisions as I really think hard about what is the best choice for the most students in Vista.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important to have that, those lenses. Thank you for that. So I want to ask you about the school district as a whole. What's going well? What do you want to celebrate? And it's your chance to brag. What's the school district getting right now?
Right. Well, our magnet schools have always been award winning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Casita is a blue ribbon school this year, and it was recognized by the Department of Education. And then
this, amazing.
Yeah, you know, so the magnet schools are always doing very, very well, being recognized. They're examples for other magnets across the state and nation, and people come to visit them. Our Vista Magnet Middle School is also an official 2023 California Distinguished School. No, 2024 California Distinguished School. So we just found out about that. And so the magnets, you know, Mission Vista, Vita, VAPA, they've always been high demand, and you know, it's always really it's something that I think brings people to Vista Unified Schools. So I love that, and I love the momentum of the magnets. Another thing that's going very well is the community schools program.
Tell people a little bit about what that means.
Wow, community schools, I smile about it because I feel like it's a baby of mine, but basically you provide students and families with the kind of scaffolds and supports and wraparound services that they need to thrive, that kids who are living in poverty need. And so for Vista Unified, we had kind of like an infrastructure even before we applied for the grant through the state of California, with parent liaisons, with partnerships with the Vista Clinic, to really you know, kind of just even improve, because some of the school districts didn't have that, like a social workers and a counselor at every school. So we applied for a grant the first time around. We applied and five schools were awarded, and it translates to extra money for extra staffing, for extended learning opportunities for students,
programs, services, right,
and especially post pandemic, we really needed those supports. But and then we applied for more, and we were awarded, nine more schools were awarded the community schools grant. So now we have a total of 14.
It's amazing.
And it's about $20 million over a five-year commitment for each school site. And
wait, for each school site?
No, I misspoke.
Okay.
For the entire district.
Okay. Okay. So it's about $1 million a school-ish over the 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great.
It's great.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm really happy about the community schools grant, because that's not something that a lot of schools in North County or a lot of districts have really taken initiative on. And I'm glad that this board has, because it's going to change the lives of our students and their families. And yeah.
Well, I'm really excited that I've been invited to participate in this community school steering committee that Dr. McKeon leads.
Yes.
And I've had the privilege to attend a couple of the meetings to hear about the work that's happening at the schools to find ways that we can loop the business community into the services and to the supports that are provided. You know, looking at, are there connections to job opportunities for the parents? Right. Are there other opportunities where businesses could come in and support, either provide services or do different things. So it's exciting to be part of that. And I know you mentioned five schools in the first cohort, nine schools in the second cohort. And I think that there's been applications for additional schools as well, but we don't know about those yet.
We'll see. With the budget, the budget deficit at the state, I don't know if more schools will be awarded. Maybe yes, maybe no, but I don't know, because it hasn't been awarded yet. But from what my understanding is, the money that has been awarded is safe no matter what. So
that's great.
That's what, at least that's what the staff from the governor's office and the staff from the speaker's office, Speaker Riva's office, said that their priority when they have the final budget in May will be to protect the grants that have been awarded. So I hope that comes to fruition for us.
Right, right.
Yeah.
What else? Anything else you want to celebrate about the district? Oh, I know there's a lot.
There's a lot. Yeah. Okay. So the another thing that I'm really excited about is our pre-apprenticeship program that is going to start at the Vista Adult School, which will expand, you know, career technical education for our students in Pathways. And it was a partnership. It is a partnership with the San Diego Workforce Partnership and with the San Diego Building Trades. And it's grant money again. Our students who, or actually they have to be graduates, so they won't be our students, but Vista graduates or anyone along the 78 corridor can apply. There's a stipend for attending, a stipend for tools, a stipend for gas or transportation.
Amazing.
And childcare.
Amazing.
So we have childcare. And so we took our partnership with EES, the provider that provides childcare for at our Vista schools, and they are opening a site there at the Vista Adult School. And so, to get students who are, well, or graduates or even their parents, right, interested in the trades. Those are jobs that are going to really reap middle class wages with benefits. And I'm really excited about that. And in concert with that, we have a new facility at RBV that is welding and woodworking shop. It's state of the art CT building. So that will really kind of feed in well to this program. So there's,
amazing.
It's super exciting.
I read recently that, you know, it's particularly in the trades, that there's a large flux of folks retiring, aging out of the workforce. And I read somewhere that for every five retirees, there's only one person ready to come in, ready to work in the trades. So it's an industry. These are industries that are in high demand. And when there are a lot of jobs and not a lot of workers, that means wages go up. It means benefits go up. And so it'll be interesting to see. And I think Vista Unified is, you know, ahead of the curve with creating these pathway programs, linking students to these trade jobs in the construction management, the welding there at RBV. I know we have a lot of pathways.
We do.
Recently, there was the CTE pathways showcase here at the Film Hub where we record this podcast. Yeah. And that was really cool to see all the ways that students can connect. But tell me just really quickly, Vista Adult School, it's under the umbrella of Vista Unified.
It is.
But it serves adults, really, like you said, anyone along the 78 corridor who's an adult looking for some sort of educational opportunity. Right. They can take classes, either enrichment classes or certificate classes or these apprenticeship classes. There's a ton of opportunities there, right?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to call that out because I think people listening don't necessarily know about this gym that we have right here in Vista. So it's great. And the folks there who run the programs are just top notch.
They are.
Yeah, totally, totally. Okay. What else did I cut you off before? So what else is on your list?
Well, mental health support for our kids. So we were also awarded a grant, the SB HIP grant. It's for mental health counseling for students and families. And through that, we have now opened something called Campus Clinic, where students can get services on campus. The first appointment with the parent, you know, but it makes it easier for working families to get their students the supports that they need at school. So I'm That's really huge. Excited about that Campus Clinic. And that is for everyone, regardless of insurance. There's no threshold whether you're in some kind of income bracket or not. And so that's exciting, especially coming out of the pandemic. We know that the pandemic really kind of put a I don't know if it's a dent, but really it's affected our students and how they interact.
It's affected everyone, adults, students, everyone, but particularly children.
Yes.
I don't remember. I read something about how many students have lost someone in their family during COVID, during, you know, the pandemic. So there's, and not just that, but there's been job loss or economic impacts.
It's
so
huge,
many things.
Right?
Yes.
And as a person who lost, I lost my stepfather in the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I lost my cousin in the pandemic.
I'm sorry.
And so my niece, right? She's one of those kids. They live in Los Angeles, right? But she's lost like two grandparents, an uncle. And, you know, there's a lot of grief, and sometimes it doesn't always show up immediately. So I'm glad that we have these safety nets for our students and our parents. And it was just this Campus Clinic was shared, I think, in the weekly newsletter that Dr. Doyle sends out yesterday, the day before yesterday. So I really hope that parents utilize it. Staff, our classified staff, they can utilize it, because some of our classified staff does not have, they might not take insurance if they're part-time. So
that's a huge resource. And also, I'll just say that as a parent in the district, you know, I'm a mom, I have all my mom friends, and we talk to each other like, hey, this is going on with my kid. How are you handling that? What can we do? And so, you know, knowing about this resource, I will absolutely also share it with my network.
Yes.
Because, you know, I think kids and everybody need support. And so it's great to know that we have that, That's huge.
Campus Clinic. So that's along with the counselors we already have. And I want to, you know, to emphasize for anyone who will see this podcast, reach out to your principal, your school counselor, or your parent liaison if you need supports for you or your child, because this is for families too. SBHIP is for parents too.
Sure.
So,
and I think sometimes parents think that maybe there's something going on with their student and it's not about their grades.
Right.
And so they think, oh, the school, this isn't a school thing.
Right.
It's about, it's a behavior or it's a grief thing. There's something else happening. And so I think parents oftentimes don't realize the wraparound services that are provided at schools. And so they don't think to reach out to their liaison to say, I'm having a challenge.
Right.
Where can I go?
Where can I go?
And those liaisons, they know. They are so plugged in. So that's a really great tip for people to just remember, you know, start there.
Yeah.
Start with your school and ask.
Yeah, and we have a good partnership with Palomar Family Counseling. They're providing services at the middle schools.
Yeah.
And then we have Dino School, or Incredible Years at the elementary school. So there's just a robust network of supports for our families and students. And that I'm really proud of as well.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I know it's not all sunshine and roses. Mm. We have some challenges on the horizon.
We do.
So tell me a little bit about what are some of the challenges facing the district in the coming months and maybe years?
So one of the biggest obstacles happening to our district and most districts in California is declining enrollment. And so with declining enrollment, like, well, when my son graduated in 2014, there were 28,000 students in Vista Unified.
Wow.
In 2014, he graduated in 2014. And now there are about 18,000 students.
Wow. Okay.
So that's
a big difference.
That's a big difference. It's substantial. And so right-sizing the district, but also, you know, we have less revenue because of the whatever base grant we get from the state of California, and trying to just, right-size personnel, right-size schools. People don't understand that. The other big obstacle is budget. It's monetary. So districts make their budgets based on like a three-year projection based on what the state says they're going to pay us per kid, our supplemental grants, and our cost of living allowance, COLA. So we wrote our budget with the COLA of like 3.7, I believe, 3.6. Well, now the projections are, because of a decline in revenue for the state of California, 0.76 is what 0.76 is what the governor's office is projecting.
Oh, wow.
Then the LAO, which is the Legislative Analyst Office, it's a nonpartisan office that gives financial advice to the state Senate and the state assembly. They're saying zero. They're recommending zero COLA. So that's an adjustment that's going to have to be made to our budget. Even though we had already had this budget planned for 3 years, we're going to have to look at what we need to cut. And so doing that is always hard because everything's important. But, you know, we're going to build the budget, or it's already built, but we're going to prioritize what kids need. What do kids need in them immediately to thrive, to succeed? And then we're going to have to, you know, make adjustments. And that's really, really hard.
That is really hard. What's the overall budget for the district?
It's over $300 million per year.
That's a big pie, right?
It's very big.
And there's a lot that goes into it.
Yes.
There's several revenue sources, and some of those revenue sources are restricted. They can only be spent on certain things.
Right.
And then you have to, when you have to make reductions, there's only certain areas that can be impacted because of the way the restricted funds work. Am I right?
It's true. And mm-hmm. some have more flexibility, right? Mm-hmm. And so our CBO, our Superintendent of Business Services, has been really great, Amy Shackelford, at using some of the one-time funds that were given to us post-pandemic through the feds or the state to shift and pay for things. And we're going to do that to the maximum amount so that programs aren't impacted. We're going to think outside the box with that. And we're listening to everyone. There's, you know, LCAP meetings all across the districts with
and
different
LCAP
stakeholders.
Means budget, right? Essentially, it's an acronym that local
control accountability plan.
But it's basically that's the budget.
That's the budget.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the budget is essentially the framework for how money can be spent on programs and services and staffing.
Right.
So really, if it's not outlined within the LCAP, within the budget, then it's not happening.
Right.
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 Okay. Got it.
Unless it's a grant that comes in later on.
And then it's usually for a very specific purpose.
Right.
Right.
Grant
okay.
money. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. So got some budget challenges coming up. And now, is there a community process for people to provide feedback on, or is it just, we got to cut, sorry? Or is there an opportunity for people?
So when I first got elected in 2019, I was like, oh, yay, I won. I'm going to be a trustee. And then in January, it was like, let's cut $25 million.
Woo!
That happened in 2019,
That's
January.
That's really hard.
And so we had many, many meetings, many workshops, went to all stakeholders across the district, there were forms that parents could fill out for what, you know, they want to see preserved, what are their priorities. And we did it with a lot of community input. So I don't think it would be any different this time, right? Because at the time we had two trustees on the board that are still on, myself. So yes,
you've been there. You've been through it. You've seen what's
So we got a lot of impact in many ways, whether it was a Google form or whether it was email or whether it was community forums, public comments and such. The parents always get to put their priorities in, tell us their priorities, staff, our employee associations as well. Everyone gets a voice. Community leaders, people who live here and don't have kids who go to our school, they can come and be part of this process as well.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's so important to get the community input, but ultimately, you know, the board has to decide what to do. And I say that because I worked for the city of Vista during 2008, 2009, 2007, the recession.
Yes.
And I know that at the time the council had to make some serious decisions about what to cut.
Right.
And the community showed up and they had, and there were people who were, I can't remember exactly what the program was, but there was something in recreation,
right,
like a class or a program that everyone was like, save this program.
Right.
And I remember the council at the time said, well, we'd love to, but we have to pay for, you know, this other thing that was right, like infrastructure or something,
right,
something significant. And so ultimately, you, I mean, it's a tough job that you have to do. So I want to say thank you for the work that you do, because you have to take, you have to approach it mindfully. You have to approach it thoughtfully, with the best interest of all the students
right,
in mind.
Right.
And at our district, you have to put students first.
Right.
So the outcomes that you mentioned earlier have to be most important. So that's, does it weigh on you, the decisions that you make?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have many sleepless nights.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Sometimes I can't disconnect from, you know, a decision, a meeting, you know, and I'm like, oh gosh, I just need to get to sleep after a board meeting, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it does. It does.
I mean, you're an elected person. You've been elected by the voters, but essentially you're a volunteer.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Right? This is not a full-time job. You're not paid a full-time salary for this work.
We don't get any salary for this work.
Yeah.
We get a stipend.
Yes, a small stipend.
It's about $400 a month.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a lot for the work that you do. So thank you
for
serving and for having a heart for students and serving that. Okay, what else do you want people to know about Vista Unified, either challenges on the horizon, things, rainbows in the clouds? Like, is there anything else that you want to share about the district and things that you're working on? We talked about dual language. Was there anything about that you wanted to mention?
Well, and dual immersion programs, it is proven that they get students who are second language learners and are in a dual immersion program have better outcomes than if they're in a structured English immersion program or a mainstream English program. So that's the one of the quickest ways to close that opportunity gap. And so being bilingual, not just for kids learning English as a second language, but all kids in the program, it really gives them a higher cognitive function, makes them ready for the world of work, right? Creates bridges among communities, understanding, empathy, and that is sorely needed.
Absolutely.
Sorely needed, right? So I'm excited that we have expanded that program. It started at Grapevine, and that was in place before I got elected. It started at Grapevine, and then it got expanded to Alamosa, which is a different community in Vista Unified, because it's actually part of Oceanside, mm-hmm, Rancho de Oro, and then Hanalei. And now we have kids that are going to go to middle school with and continue their dual language pathways. It'll be at Madison this year. And then for the kids who are at Alamosa, they'll be going to Roosevelt Middle School, because that's the closest middle school there. So the expansion is exciting. It's another kind of personalized way that parents can choose what they want for their kids, whether it be a STEM focus, an arts focus. So I'm excited about that, but really that's one of the best ways to close opportunity gaps, but it's good for everyone. And kids will end up graduating from Vista High or RBV High or Mission Vista with seals of biliteracy from the state of California.
That's huge.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Absolutely.
It opens so many doors.
Yeah. And I also think like there's a bunch of students that are enrolled that are not English language learners, but they're Latino, they're Mexican Americans, you know, and they might know a little bit of each language, but it allows them to maintain their mother tongue and communicate with family members, right? Instead of just subtracting, oh, we're going to subtract the language from this child. Like say someone like my niece, I have three nieces enrolled in dual immersion programs in Los Angeles. And, you know, they grew up in a house where their parents spoke English, but they wanted to learn Spanish and they can communicate well with their grandparents and relatives. And they even speak better than my sisters and I, right? Because we didn't have the opportunity to learn Spanish, mm-hmm, in elementary school. So, it's great because it lets folks keep their mother tongue.
It's a connection to culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that connection to culture is so important because it also adds to just your sense of belonging,
absolutely,
your place in the world. That's amazing.
And we need two languages for the university, right? Like if we want to make you ready for university, it requires two languages. And so why, you know, why subtract it? Like, I didn't get to take Spanish classes until high school.
Right.
And when I went to the university and I got my bilingual, I took my bilingual classes for my BCLAD, I failed the writing part the first time. And I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? Okay, forget it. I'm not going to be a bilingual teacher. And a friend of mine said, no, you're going to be a bilingual teacher. Go back, take another class, take the test. And I passed it the second time. But, you know, it just... I just didn't have that opportunity to really read and write in Spanish as a child. It was just like English, 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 which is super important, right? But Spanish is also an important language across a world, right? Not just a nation, but across the world. So, yeah, I think it's great. The Biliteracy Seal is going to open a lot of doors for folks. And it's not just going to be kids of Latino descent, because we have a lot of kids that don't identify as Latino, Mexican American, anything, and they're in the program.
I want my kids to be biliterate.
Yeah.
I want them to be bilingual and biliterate, because it's not the same. One is speaking, one's reading, writing, right? So I would love for my kids to be.
Yeah.
Because it would just open so many doors for them. So, well, I want to thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And I have a few last questions that I ask all of my guests.
Okay.
So I want to ask you, the first one is, tell me a book that you think everyone should read. Give me a book recommendation. Mm.
The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls.
Okay.
And that book is about, it's a memoir of her life and this relationship she had with her parents, who were very dysfunctional. And boy, the kids went through so much, trials and tribulations, movement, poverty, eating out of trash cans. But how this family persevered is amazing, and also kind of like the forgiveness that they had for their parents for not being the parents that they needed in terms of providing for them and keeping them safe in that manner. And it resonates with me because I can kind of relate to that. My dad left my mom when she was pregnant of me. And, you know, my mom was this young single mom trying to do the best for her children. And, you know, we had a lot of trauma in our lives. But yet I love my parents, and I know there wasn't a book for how to be a parent. So I think this memoir helped me relate, and I knew that there was other people out there like that, and probably a lot of our students have to deal with some of these obstacles that are similar to what Jeanette Walls and her siblings went through. So yeah, I think it's a great book. It's kind of intense, but
sounds very healing, like a healing thing to read, especially if you can connect with that story.
Exactly. So, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. I'll add it to my list.
Yeah.
I definitely want to read that.
Yeah.
Sounds, I think I could relate to some of that as well. So, okay. Tell me your jam. What's a song that you always have to turn up?
The Rapper's Delight by Sugar Hill Gang. Yeah.
That's a fun one.
It is a fun one. I was 7 when it came out, and I don't know who had it on, whether it was my older brother, John, or my mom had a really good friend down the street. Her name was Jan Hill, and maybe she had it on, but we had the record. It was like blue with like a horn. And
it was
loved
a game
that.
Changer for the industry and when it came out. So
yeah.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. Okay. I like it.
Yeah.
I can hear it in my head right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Martha, what's something that inspires you?
Children inspire me. When I see that light, right? A kid is maybe struggling with the concept. And all of a sudden, you know, 2 or 3 months later, they get it and that light comes on and they're so happy to share that I can do this now. That keeps me going. That keeps me going. The children in this community inspire me. The children that I serve in Escondido inspire me. You know, wanting the best outcome for kids.
I love that. Spoken like a teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Last question. Tell me a Vista business that deserves a shout out.
Well, there are many, but one business that I frequent often is the Chiropractic Rehabilitation Wellness Center here on Main Street. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Dr. Heller. He takes care of my needs. I used to run a lot. I used to bicycle a lot, but he'd keep me ready for them 10Ks or those half marathons. The staff there are so wonderful and professional, whether it's, you know, physical therapy, an adjustment, acupuncture, massage. They're wonderful and very holistic and just the kindest folks out, you know, serving everyone who goes in into the center. So yeah, try them out if you haven't been there before.
Well, you know, I've been there because I've seen you there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I go there as well. It's a great place. And sometime I'll have to tell you about the founder, Dr. Barrick, and how he truly saved my life.
Wow.
About 13 years ago. Yeah. Truly saved my life. So I'll have to tell you that. Yeah. I'll tell you offline about that one. Yeah. Okay. So I want to thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was a wonderful conversation, and I'm glad that I was able to share some of the great initiatives that Vista Unified has in place currently. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I want to thank Vista Unified School Board Trustee Martha Alvarado for joining me today. And thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe and tell a friend. Help us move Vista forward with velocity. The Vista Chamber of Commerce is a nonprofit organization that serves as a catalyst for business growth. Find us online at vistachamber.org.